This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So how's your life been? What's going on?
Glad you asked. I got about 12 minutes on that. This morning... No, I'm doing well. I'm really proud of this movie, and it's fun to finally show it to people.
You are one of those filmmakers that I have thoroughly enjoyed all of your movies.
Wow, thank you.
And it's really hard to hit that level again and again and again. What is the secret?
Well, there certainly is no secret in that there's plenty of films who don't like plenty of people who don't like plenty of my movies, but each one of my films is personal. Each one of my films is autobiographical, like emotionally autobiographical. And I like directors who do that, I guess. With each one of my films, I'm kind of exploring one of my own issues, and I try to expose myself a little, in the film. And that's kind of it, and I'm sure I'll make a film soon enough that'll disappoint you.
Well, let's not go with that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about getting this film off the ground. Was it something that... Was it a struggle to get financing?
No, it was really... I mean, it's, it was embarrassingly easy. Diablo and I have been fortunate with our success together. My films have fortunately made money, and Charlize is a huge movie star, so we were fiscally responsible. We made the movie for $12 million. We shot it in 30 days, and there was a confidence in our ability to do this movie, despite the fact that the third act is tricky. I mean, the third act is designed to make you uncomfortable. It's designed to make you cringe, and that's the feeling you have as you walk out of the theater, which is not always what a studio wants. But I'm thrilled that they let me do this, because we need movies that make us uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's also a lot of stuff in the film that generally doesn't get portrayed very often in movies, especially with a huge movie star being so exposed, if you will, and not being a great person, let's say all the time. That's one of the great things about the material. Is that one of the things that drew you in and said, this is why I have to make it?
The reason I had to make it was the third act. It was three consecutive scenes. The breakdown on the lawn, the love scene with Patton, and the breakfast table scene with Sandra. Everything leading up to that is just groundwork for those three scenes. And it's about this emotional breakdown that leads us to think that the character's going to change, and then she doesn't. And finding humanity within a character who misbehaves greatly, and understanding that she's not just a mean girl, but a deeply flawed human being who wants to be loved and wants to find her way in life, which is something that I think all people feel, I certainly feel, and find a way to do that so that she's not just some caricature.
The music in the film is very effective. A lot of 90s stuff. Mm. How much was that Diablo? How much was that you? And how tricky was it to get the music rights?
Music rights wasn't too hard. And it was a real mix. There was a lot of stuff in the screenplay. Teenage Fan Club, obviously in the screenplay. Diablo has great taste in music, and she's very explicit in her screenplays about all kinds of detail. Production design, clothes, all kinds of things. And music. I'm also, Diablo and I are basically the same age, so, we came out of the same era of music, so, I threw in Cracker Low and the Four Non Blondes song and a whole bunch of others, and then we also did this fun thing, I'm not sure if you caught this, but the Muzak in the movie is all 90s music.
I did catch that.
So
all the background stuff?
Yeah. It's also kind of a symbol of aging when the pop music of your youth has become, the sad, sedentary music of shopping.
That's actually very true. And what I've also noticed is radio stations that used to be,
when you hear Guns N' Roses on KRS-101, you're on the oldie station.
Yeah.
Here's another oldie from 1989. Wah, 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 wah. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, we're on the exact same page.
Oh, yeah. 20th anniversary of Nevermind?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, let's not talk about
20th?
That. Yeah, look, it's a bad idea. It really gets to you. It got to me. How have you changed as a filmmaker in terms of coverage on your movies. Did you say overshoot when you first started, and are now, are you, do you know exactly what you're looking for, or have you always known exactly what you're looking for in terms of coverage?
I'm really specific in the way that I shoot. I've always had a very good sense of what I need in the editing room, and I used to shoot in a way that was, that drew more attention to the camera, and I've tried with each film to draw less and less attention to the camera. Because I think when you pay attention to the shots, you're aware of the fact that there's a director. And I think it's the director's job to disappear and allow the movie to just feel. And certainly on a screen, on a movie like this where the writing and the acting is so good, I really wanted it to disappear and just make sure that I was creating a framework for them.
So that means there's going to be no Coca Cabana Goodfellas shot for you in the future where it's 8 minutes from street and...
I certainly don't think so. I don't know the purpose of that shot. And it's not, it's certainly not the most interesting shot in Goodfellas. You know, the shots I remember most from Scorsese's movies are the shots that were not impressive, but the shots that made me feel something. And yes, the Coco Cabana shot did make you feel something. It really gave you a sense of this guy's world and the kind of seamless nature of being a successful mobster. But, I'm never going to do one of those long shots. Because I'm too big a fan of rhythm and editing. But, and I'd much rather my editing be brave than my shooting.
Okay. Talk a little bit about deleted scenes in Young Adult. Did you have a lot? Did you have almost none? And...
There's a few. There's always deleted scenes. They were less interesting. The deleted scenes on this movie were less interesting than the deleted scenes in, like, my previous films.
Okay. Are you the type... I'm not sure if you've done this on your Blu-rays, and I apologize for not knowing. Are you the type that likes...
Yeah, I always include them.
Warts and all, everything?
Yeah, I'm a believer that people need to understand that filmmaking is not a perfect process for anybody. And Fincher overshoots. I mean, like... It is a process in which you find the film, and the film finds you. And that is every film. And too many people believe in this kind of, that Hitchcock thing that he only shot, you know, exactly the shots he needed for the dialogue he needed. And I think that's bullshit. Even if that was true for that singular filmmaker. Filmmaking is finding a piece of granite, and you start to chip away, and then you have the shape of a head, and you get the shape of the arm, and you see the shape of the face, and the face starts to gather character. You have to find it. And I believe in including the deleted materials promotes that idea.
You are known for premiering your films or going with Toronto,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't with Young Adult.
Toronto was the first place we showed the film.
Young Adult?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Not during the film festival.
Oh, okay. Wait, I was like, wait a minute. You just totally threw me for a loop, dude.
Just a couple months later.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
I was having fun with
you. Yeah, okay, you totally fucked me up. Did you... what was the motivation for that? Or did you want to premiere it there, or did you sort of say, I'm going to do a different one this time?
This is a different film. This is a different film, and it required a different showcase. And I think once you see the film, then you've seen it. You get that this movie does very different things than my previous films, and I didn't want people going in expecting a film similar to the ones I've already made. It needed to have its own unique showcase. And selfishly, I kind of wanted to do something that had nothing to do with business. I wanted the premiere of this film to be simply a showcase for the fans. And, sorry, the way that we brought it to those 6 theaters, which are all fan theaters, you know, we brought it to Alamo in Austin, and we brought it to the New Bev in L.A., and we brought it to the Music Box in Chicago. We brought it to theaters to show it to fans first. And it was almost like a spiritual cleanse to just kind of not be thinking about selling the film, not be doing press, just to be like, if you're a movie fan, come see something that's really different.
Do you have all 6 of the posters?
Oh, of course I do.
Are they framed, or you just have them rolled in a poster too?
They are at the framing place now.
I definitely want to ask you, you've been doing live readings,
yeah.
And I know you just did one last
You're
night.
You're in L.A., right?
I am.
Have you made it to one yet?
I've been out of town both times.
Oh, my God. They're amazing.
Well, I wanted to ask you, how did this all get started, and what determined the two that you've done?
So, I did a table read of one of my scripts, and I thought, why don't we do this all the time? It'd be great to table read some classic screenplays. You know, plays, you get to see various versions of plays. Movies is only one version, and the writing is so good on some of these scripts. And Elvis Mitchell took over the film program at LACMA, and he's a friend of mine, and he said, do you have any ideas? And I said, oh my God, I've something I've wanted to do forever. Let's do this table read idea. And he dug it. So we started brainstorming on what to do, and we came up with six that we wanted to do, and we're doing 6 months. We're doing one a month for 6 months. And we started with Breakfast Club because, A, we wanted the idea to take flight, and we wanted something that was going to draw attention to it. We wanted something populous where everyone knew the dialogue. We wanted something with not that many characters that took place in not that many locations. And that was deeply emotional and funny. And The Breakfast Club has all those things. And then with the second one, we went for a classic. We thought, if we could secure people with the first one, let's do a second movie that is just one of the greatest written movies of all time. And what was interesting about The Apartment was, unlike Breakfast Club, where everyone in the audience had seen the movie like 100 times, for the audience of The Apartment, a large portion of the audience had never seen The Apartment. And this was their first experience with the movie, which is crazy. And carried a lot of responsibility. And fortunately, we had an unbelievable cast. You knew the cast. You heard the cast on both.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to just hear the words and not look at the pictures. I mean, we do have I'm not sure if you've seen photos, but there's a giant screen behind the actors. And on the screen, we do photos of all the locations in the film.
I haven't seen that.
So we've painted out the actors, so all you see is the location that the characters are in, and then sitting at chairs with stands are the actors reading it. And it's just been wonderful. We're doing Princess Bride in December.
What's the date of that?
December 15th.
Yeah, I'm going to need a ticket. Just throwing that out there.
Are you going to need a ticket? Do you know how fast it's sold out?
We
announced the last one without saying the movie or the cast, and it sold out in 30 minutes. 600-seat theater.
Princess Bride is one of my all-time favorites.
It's going to be... I can't tell you the cast, but it's going to be fucking crazy.
Well, I was going to say that... Yeah, I can't even imagine. Have you already figured out what the next three are going to be and just haven't announced it, or are you still figuring that out?
No. We know the six.
Okay.
All right.
Can I have one more question? Then I'm going to leave you on that note and say thank you for your time today.
Great seeing you.
Great to see you.